a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
To say anticipation was high for The Mandalorian, the first ever live-action Star Wars TV series on Disney+, that would be an understatement. The trailers looked great, the casting was intriguing, the setting, just 5 years after Return of the Jedi, was one longtime fans wanted to see, and to top it off, Jon Favreau was in charge, the guy who helped launch the Marvel Cinematic Universe and created one of the best live-action Disney movies, The Jungle Book. That could only be good news, right? Yet even with all that, somehow we even underestimated the impact that The Mandalorian would have. Hi, I'm Andy Farnsworth, and welcome to KSL's Fan Effect podcast, presented by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters. In this episode, I'm joined by my colleague and friend, Mary Richards. She's back after a hiatus from the girl shows. Just kidding.
When I was on with Downton Abbey.
Came on for Downton Abbey. If we had done
that.
One about Little Women, I know we would have had you on for sure.
There's still time.
And we're also joined by Deseret.com entertainment editor and my Star Wars movie marathon buddy, Herb Scribner. Herb, welcome back as well.
I'm just going to move into this room. I feel like I'm always here.
You're welcome here all the time.
There's Wi-Fi.
So if you need to do that, then that's totally fine.
Okay, cool.
So at a time when Star Wars fans seem divided over the movies, this is a series that seems to have brought everyone together somehow. How? What do you think?
How it brings people together?
How is it bringing the Star Wars fandom that's so fractured over The Last Jedi, The Rise of Skywalker, Disney's direction, the Resistance cartoon, I don't think is all that great. But everybody, I got to be honest, I haven't met anybody who said, I think The Mandalorian
sucks. No, I tell you why. It's because, you call him the child, if we want to be correct, it's because of Baby Yoda. He is... for president, please, in 2020. I mean, that it kicks into everybody's natural, this is my view as a mother of five, but our caretaking instincts. We want to take care of that sweet little child, and we just root for this man, the Mandalorian, who's become his pseudo-father. And the fights and stuff are really, really cool.
And the fights and stuff. Herb, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Baby Yoda being, the fact that they created like an instant meme, instant pop culture icon, big move there. And that obviously works for a lot of people. But I think one of the things that got me before even Baby Yoda showed up was that this show connects a lot to Star Wars nostalgia. And it makes you feel like it's an older movie and like it is one of the original trilogy films. So I think they really connected well there. And
Mary's nodding. Mary, in a podcast, you have to speak.
Oh, I do. I didn't want to interrupt, but I'm completely agreeing. I'm doing my bobblehead when I interview people. I'm like, yes, keep going, Herb. Yes, this is golden. It is true because it happens so soon after Return of the Jedi that it does kind of. And also, you talked on about the memes thing, the instant memes, but I feel like many of us, myself included in the newsroom and others, we want to be a part of what everybody's talking about. And so if everybody's talking about this or posting about this, we want to know what's happening. Oh, I want to see that too. Then we all start to watch it and we realize it was great writing, great, just all of those things that Star Wars could have been in these last three episodes, I think.
Now, that goes to, in my opinion, so I agree with you. I think it's interesting, Herb, because I would say Baby Yoda is probably what cemented it and maybe what made it go bigger than what was just going to be the initial fans that signed up on day one of Disney Plus to watch The Mandalorian. And I'll admit, I ended up with that day off from work by happy accident. It wasn't on purpose.
Sure.
But I woke up that morning, I was like, oh yeah, Disney Plus is today. And I signed up right then and watched The Mandalorian sitting in my bed on my phone because I was like, oh, that's right, I could check this out. But so Baby Yoda cemented it and I think made it take off. But we don't meet him until literally the last minute of the first episode. So either we were sold on it and Baby Yoda is the clincher, mm-hmm. or we don't make it to that. because we're like, this sucks. And nobody got to that point. It was designed specifically to feel like a Western, a space Western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has those elements. Some of the early talk from Jon Favreau, who's the executive producer, and I think he helped write it. Then, of course, each episode was directed by somebody else.
Yes, Bryce Dallas Howard showing up.
Bryce Dallas Howard did the episode with the big AT-ST on the jungle planet.
Nostalgia coming back with that one, for sure.
Yeah.
But the director of the first episode, Favreau didn't actually direct any episodes, but the director of the first episode is Dave Filoni, which, for those who've been Star Wars fans know, he wrote and essentially created the Clone Wars cartoon animated series and Star Wars Rebels. And so he has definite Star Wars cred with fans because he's been telling great stories. And I think that was a good idea because he is the first one. Let's be honest. I don't know. Neither of you are probably old enough to remember the attempts at Star Wars television in the 80s. I'm older than you.
Just a little bit. Okay.
I'm not old enough. That's for sure.
But there was an animated series called Droids in the 80s and Ewoks in the 80s, and they were awful.
Oh, no.
Awful. And I was a huge Star Wars fan even then, and I could not watch them.
Like the
It was
like the
terrible
Christmas
animation.
One.
It was, well, it was aimed at kids,
but
and it was the Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh.
And first of all, the Ewoks weren't interesting enough by themselves. I found quickly that without Luke Skywalker and Han Solo, the Ewoks were not interesting at all.
I think I remember that now that you say that. It is ringing a bell.
Now, they did a couple of live-action movies, the Ewok Adventure and Ewoks the Battle for Endor.
I'm picturing the cartoon.
And those were slightly better. But the cartoon was terrible, and the droids cartoon was just horrible. It was R2 and 3PO, and I guess they were on Tattoo. I've scrubbed a lot of it from my mind.
I remember going to like an old video rental store. There's this thing called Blockbuster.
Really?
You heard of
it?
Not know.
And I remember seeing
that. Is it made
out
of blocks?
It is. You build them and you break them.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, so I remember seeing the VHS tape for those. And then I remember like looking at the back and being like, this isn't a Star Wars movie. And
putting
it down.
So. Yeah. We lived overseas, but I feel like someone taped that and sent it to us because I remember the cartoon now that you mentioned that. But
at any rate, that was all the Star Wars TV we had. And one of the arguments that's been between Star Wars and Star Trek has been, you know, people talk about how Star Trek has like a more rich universe with more developed characters. And that's because they had originally 79 episodes of a TV show for you to get to know the characters, to get to know the ship, you know, the different types of things. So that when the movies came around, you were revisiting characters that you already knew to a certain extent. Or if you watched the movie, you'd be like, oh, those kind of like them. And it seems like a whole bunch of things have gone on that you didn't know about. But you can go back and then get to know it all through the episodes. Star Wars, on the other hand, has been a series of 2 to 2.5 hour movies. And in a 2.5 hour, 2 to 2.5 hour movie period, you can only do so much character development, especially if it's a science fiction action series. So Star Wars has been limited, and I say that with air quotes, by the fact that you can only tell so much story in 2 hours while still having visual effects. So this is our first chance, other than Dave Filoni, who figured out how to tell a Star Wars story over a series. And that's, Herb, you've been watching the Clone Wars episodes now.
Yeah.
And you hadn't watched it before, is that correct?
I'd watched here and there, but I never dedicated a lot of time to it.
And what are your thoughts just quickly on having now gone in specifically to watch episodes to learn some additional Star Wars history?
I think Star Wars, and maybe we get into this later, but one of my big takeaways from The Mandalorian and The Clone Wars and all this is that Star Wars works really, really well as a TV series. Mm. I think you get to dip into other planets, you get to meet new characters, and you don't have to like commit to, oh, this is all I get. And that's what I feel with Star Wars movies. It's like, oh, this is all the Star Wars lore I get for now.
Correct.
Where a TV series, you get this, and then next week you get this, and then next week you get this. And
character arcs.
Yeah, and you get to really dive deep.
And that's one of the things. So the prequel trilogy becomes better after you've gotten to know the characters from the Clone Wars.
Still isn't. Does it? I haven't watched the Clone
Wars.
Because
you haven't watched it, you don't know. You don't get to know Mace Windu. You don't get to know Anakin, you know, other characters, Ahsoka, who ends up showing up in different things, whose voice showed up at the end of Rise of Skywalker.
You know, and I should, because I feel like I'm a big fan, but I'm not like my brothers and you guys where you talk about canon and all these other people. And one of my brothers, his handle is always Wedge Antilles. And I was like, who's that again? So they know all these names. So as just kind of a surface fan as I am, I enjoy it, but now I'm realizing I would know so much more if I did all these other things.
But it's important, though, to have, you know, to hear your perspective on it, because I can't have that perspective anymore. Right. I can't have the,
you've gone too
well, what
deep.
Did you think of it? Well, I thought it was okay, but I also was surprised that this particular piece of his armor on the right side didn't look.
I know.
I'm not quite that bad, but I'm a lot closer to that than I am to the surface fan who's like, now, what's a Mandalorian? Is that like, is it half man, half DeLorean? By the way, that's my favorite joke from everything.
I love that joke so much.
But so it's nice to see, you know, for somebody who I've just watched this, you've just watched this.
Right.
And you decided you liked it. Why? Is it just because Baby Yoda was cute or was there more
so
than that?
So cute, Andy. Everybody needs to agree on that.
I don't think anybody disputes that.
So it was interesting. I actually, when we split Disney Plus with one of my brothers, my little kids who love Star Wars wanted to watch it. And I thought, okay, fine. And then all of a sudden they're like, Mom, you have to watch this with us. And so I was like, oh, fine. And then I was just hooked because... A, Baby Yoda. I mean, come on. But B...
the child,
the
officially.
Child.
I know. But we should say we at least can acknowledge, we know that he's officially called the child. But from henceforth, we will refer to him as Baby Yoda.
Hashtag. It's just enough time. Each episode is just enough. You learn... I mean, I just like the pacing. I love the shots, the, you know, all that cinematography stuff. I did not know, and I don't know if you're doing spoilers, so I'll just say something about...
Yeah, at this point, it's spoilers. That's a good point, though. We're going to talk spoilers.
Well, in that last episode, which you'll probably talk about later, but when he, you know, cuts his way out, I'm just thinking, whoa, where did he get that cool sword? That's amazing. And then I go on the internet, and everyone's like, that's the sword, blah, blah, blah.
The dark saber.
Like, dark saber, and they're saying it's something more than me just a fan. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. How do you get out of that? Were there airbags in there? You know, I'm thinking all these things, and everybody
else
is going...
Probably don't need airbags in space, but I don't know.
We crash landed the thing. So it's just, it just hooked me because maybe the nostalgia of being, watching them back then, but I like the character. I'm intrigued about behind what's under the mask. And also, I did not think he would look like that when they took his mask off. I thought he'd look more like Chris Pratt. I don't know why.
Interesting.
That's what I was picturing in my head.
Chris Pratt, huh?
I don't know why. That was man,
I was going to say Herb Scribner.
Yeah. Dark.
I was a close second
handsome
choice
sure
for the role,
but
I denied
the facial
it
hair would be kind of, would that be uncomfortable under the mask?
Maybe I had never watched Game of Thrones, which Pedro Pascal sort of made his fan name in was Game of Thrones. And so I didn't know what he looked
voice
like, but he does. He has a perfect clipped voice for what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
And so... Much like when Kylo Ren took his mask off the first time in The Force Awakens,
right.
I was a little disappointed.
Right.
Actually, maybe every character who's ever taken their mask off, I've been a little disappointed. I was really disappointed
Darth
that Darth Vader looked like an old man.
What's interesting about Pedro Pascal is that like there's been online chatter that people like, jokingly, of course, are mad that he has to wear a mask the whole time because like people find him really good looking.
Oh.
So they're like, wow, they cast this really good looking guy to be under a mask.
Right.
Yeah. So it's
just
kind
a
of a
voiceover
funny
actor, really.
It looks like what
point
they did with Carrie Russell in Rise of Skywalker.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
You just see the eyes.
You see her eyes once.
I didn't
she
realize
liked that because she didn't have to have everybody looking at her.
That's true.
Oh, that's true.
I mean,
you know, we were talking.
What if Felicity had a mask for the whole show?
What?
So we'd never know about
wig
her haircut.
Yeah, exactly. Someone brought this up, that Solo, the movie Solo, would have been better in this format. Episodic, you know, kind of getting to know different people, different storylines with each week. And, you know, and I kind of agree with that.
I kind of agree, too. Herb, when we did our Star Wars Marathon podcast, which, by the way, is available on the Fan Effect down page. If
he's,
this is the only one you've ever listened to,
there,
I'm pointing down.
Scroll
down, you're right,
and find that one.
Thank you.
The sign
thank
language
you, because it is podcast. I do need to describe things that I'm motioning.
He's pointing down.
But at any rate, that was one of the things I said, especially about episode one, mm-hmm, was I would have preferred it as a 10-episode series to where we could get to know all these people as they're setting the table for something that's going to be
right
something that we immerse ourselves in later. It doesn't have to be because, as we also noted, Star Wars A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back allowed us to meet characters quickly,
mm-hmm,
and still feel like we knew a lot about them.
That's
based
true
on well-written interactions between other characters. Like, we didn't know anything about Lando except at some point he owned the Millennium Falcon. And we knew that
right
because, what have you done to my ship?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then, well, they're friends. Okay, I guess they're friends. Sure. Oh, wait, now he's betraying us. But we got all that really quickly. We got a lot about Han Solo just from his interaction with Greedo, his interactions with Luke. So well written, you can still get character development in 2 hours. But since it's a whole universe, peak TV, I said, peak TV
yep
has spoiled. Now I want it spread out. I'm
right
fine with episodic stuff.
I'll take the time.
It doesn't have to be self-contained every single time. Take some time and let us get to know it. Then it feels like you're watching a long movie. Let's be honest. miniseries are things that are dead on television. That used to be a big deal.
Yes.
The best adaptations of books were miniseries on television because over multiple nights you could watch the whole story.
Right.
And you didn't have to condense it down. Well, they don't do that on TV anymore. So now we've got these streaming series, which have essentially become miniseries of the past,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it was so easy to hit next episode. I mean, a lot of people waited and they watched it each
binger,
week.
But
I waited a little bit and caught up a few at a time because I was. Here's my only criticism in The Mandalorian. It's because I am.
Warning. Criticism. No, just kidding.
From this prude over here, the mother of five, who just. I get a little squeamish about violence. And I felt like some of these big plow down all the troopers scenes were a little too much.
Just remember. Most kids think stormtroopers are robots because they never take their masks off.
That's true. But
I thought that for a while.
Yeah.
Little kids think they're robots, and especially because it looks like it says oil on their backs.
Oh, that's where they put the oil in.
Well, I don't know. That for reals, tons and tons of Star Wars fans growing up when I did thought the exact same thing.
Oh, I don't know.
It now looks like it says oil.
Now with Finn O2HO whatever, I think, oh, it's a real person under there.
But that's The Force Awakens.
Oh, so we'll just put
that's,
that aside.
That's way later. The stormtroopers in the time of the Empire were
robots. Oh, well, there you go.
No, but most kids, as long as they're faceless, don't
worry too much.
They'll just
felt unbelievable that he could escape so many times and everyone around him is getting mowed down by bullets that don't scratch him.
This is what we call the A-Team paradox.
Oh.
Because the A-Team had him getting out of ridiculous situations where 47 people are firing machine guns at
and
them.
They just
and you
out.
Can't even see the bullets. But somehow none of them ever get hit. I mean, AK-47s emptying magazines
and
at
he's
each
fine.
Other.
And I don't want him to get hurt. I mean, I like The Mandalorian.
Well, that makes perfect sense. You root for the hero.
Exactly.
So we start with The Mandalorian. Let's get some background. So maybe there's some things that we can tell you today that you didn't know about the series. You enjoyed watching it. But how did this series come about? And some of the background stuff, as I was doing a little bit of research, I was really fascinated by as I was, digging around on the internet. And I found several different articles on Entertainment Weekly, on The Hollywood Reporter, Variety, et cetera. And I put together some of the things that I thought were the most interesting. And first of all, it's how it came about. Like, what was the impetus behind it? Jon Favreau said he was always curious about what other people in the cantina on Star Wars were up to. How did they get there? What were they doing there that day? Yes, we didn't follow their story, but why was Hammerhead sitting in the cantina that particular day? Robot Chicken has showed us what the walrus-faced guy and the pig-nosed doctor were doing there.
Those guys. Yikes.
Which, by the way, one of the funniest sketches of Robot Chicken. You should look it up.
All right.
Robot Chicken Star Wars Cantina.
They also
it was
pop
all
up
a big misunderstanding.
Don't they? They
do
pop
they
up in Solo?
Yes.
I they, feel
no,
like
no.
They do.
It was Rogue One.
Rogue One. Sorry.
That would make sense.
That one actually, that particular cameo bugged me because this takes place literally not a few days before the Death Star shows up at Alderaan, blows it up, which is like, how did they get from the one planet to the other? That one seemed like a gratuitous cameo.
Yeah,
it really
did.
I did not think that deeply about it. I just thought, oh, yeah, those guys.
Yeah, they would have made more sense in Solo, to be honest, than
before.
They would have made in Rogue One.
Yeah.
But that's just nitpicking on my part. But he says we're really digging really deep into the toy chest and pulling out the action figures that people were always curious about and were not quite in the center frame but have a lot of potential. Or as Dave Filoni puts it, who is helping on the series, the Clone Wars guy, these are the action figures you got. Your older brothers have the good ones. Somehow you got Boba Fett. And if you have Boba Fett, you could always tell a good story.
Interesting.
Oh, I've done that to my own children. One of them
the
got...
good ones get the good ones. Yes. And the
whoops. Okay, I'm going to remedy that.
Dave Filoni said this, I've seen a lot of Star Wars, and what's most exciting to me about The Mandalorian is that I'm very confident we did some things, and fans will see things that have never been seen before. What do you think?
I love that idea. I think one of the things that, like, I think with Star Wars, we know that Disney, like, has tried here and there to, like, make it, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? Like, they're, with, like, individual
Everybody's
movies.
Trying that now.
Everybody's trying that, right? Series,
We've
all
got
that.
We got Godzilla versus Kong coming out in 2020.
Right. Oh, we got, like, and then Star Wars has this deep, deep lore, and for some reason, they decided to kill all the expanded universe stuff, but that's its own issue. Anyway, this is cool.
That was probably for money's sake.
Yeah, this is cool.
Because then you'd have to pay people who'd written the other material and created the other characters.
Right.
Instead of coming up with your own. So there's, unfortunately, where the real world creeps into your fantasy universes.
Yeah. So this is cool, though, because it does allow you to, like, when you talk about the action figures, right, it allows you to automatically create these other characters in the Star Wars lore that you can bring up later. So
we didn't get officially IG-88, but we got an IG droid.
Right. And it's cool, too, because we get, like, okay, so you got the Mandalorian now. He's doing his thing, and then he's a big character. And so, like, maybe, and I think there are even rumors of this, like, in a future Star Wars movie, maybe he pops up, and now you have his backstory. So I think it's cool that, yes, you only have, like, these limited, like, action figures, but you get to create these, like, unique stories that can serve you later on, and it starts to, like, widen the universe. So I think that's a really cool thing. And I like the idea of, like, exploring who's in the cantina, right? Because everybody has their own story. Not everybody's a Skywalker, even though apparently you can.
Even though apparently everybody is a Skywalker if you want
to
be.
You can claim to be a Skywalker, yeah. So there's that.
And you know what was fascinating to me, too, thinking about that, is the original trilogy made me think that everybody knew about Luke and all these things, and they are these main characters. But in The Mandalorian, he's kind of like, oh, I've heard about something, maybe the Jedi. You know, they don't even say the Jedi. And you think, there's this whole galaxy, this whole other universe of people going about their daily lives, and what did those lives look like, and how did they live under, you know, these circumstances and these wars and stuff. And
there's a part of me that finds that hard to believe, that, you know, they're like, well, what was this Jedi thing?
Right.
Like, yes, it's been, you know, 35, 40 years since the Jedi Purge is what they call it, Order 66. But to think that, like, nobody remembers it. Like, I'm thinking what was happening 40 years ago, and that puts us back in the 80s, the late 70s, early 80s. It feels a little hard to believe that they're just like, whoa, Jedi? What is that?
That'd be like us not knowing about the Berlin Wall, you know, all those things that had happened. Like,
now, the only thing, the in-universe argument is that because, as far as the whole universe knows, except for those of us who watched the movies from our universe, and Anakin Skywalker and the Emperor and Obi-Wan and Yoda. Well, no, just that the Jedi were traitors to the Republic.
Oh.
And the clones had to kill them all because they were going to try to take over the government.
Oh, right. Spun
and
a
so
new cycle. Got
the
it.
Emperor then spreads his. That's one thing that you see in Rebels and some in Clone Wars. In fact, in Clone Wars, it's really well done. It's just these background shots every so often, and you don't catch it until you watch it with subtitles. And as they're like flying past a billboard of Palpatine saying something, you can read what he's saying, and it's little snippets like, you know, we're unfortunately going to have to continue to expand, or, you know, we're hearing some troubling things about Jedi.
Oh.
You know, just little snippets here and there, as if it was laying the groundwork so that when the moment comes, the rest of the galaxy is like, oh, my gosh, the Jedi were traitors. You know, it's a good thing they're all gone and that we're all safe now.
Wow.
Interesting.
So that's the only reason I could possibly believe
that
sort of the.
Know.
Yeah. Hmm. But
they've been ghosted.
At this point, we're 5 years after the fall of the Empire.
Yeah.
So this takes place 5 years after Return of the Jedi. And they wanted that sense of lawlessness because that fits in the Old West theme.
Mm-hmm.
Jon Favreau said he kind of put his idea together while he was working on the Lion King remake that they put out last year. And he said after he'd finished reviewing shots on the Lion King, he'd spend a few hours working on his secret project. And Lucasfilm head Kathleen Kennedy had suggested that Favreau meet with Dave Filoni, who had co-created those animated shows we talked about. Filoni actually doodled on some cocktail napkins an image of Baby Yoda. That was the first genesis of it.
Yes.
Wow.
So it is all around him. I knew it.
And multiple artists would then refine the image in a concept drawing by a guy named Christian Alsmann, with Baby Yoda in that worn little makeshift garment,
so
actually
cute.
Became, you know, the foundation of what they designed. But Favreau said it looked cute, but it also looked a little weird. That's part of Yoda. It can't just be cute. It can't just be a straight up Disney baby. It has to be a little bit
big eyes.
Yeah.
Baby Yoda's large ears are not just there for aesthetic purposes. Favreau says the ears, the posture, the cocking of the head with a dog, a lot of expressions come from that. A big part of it was making something that felt like a pet that you had a connection with.
There it is. We love our pets in America.
Right. And if you think about it, you know, he looked like a baby.
He was a baby.
Yeah.
It works. Have you done the thing with the age? You know, there was a big thing for a while, the app that would make you look old.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I did that.
And then there was, right, but there
you're
was,
young, you can still
but
do
it
that.
Was funny to do. My younger
it
brother did it,
yeah.
And it aged him to the exact age that my dad was, and they looked so much alike, it was freaky.
Spot on.
Like my current dad look and my brother with his aged 40 years look.
Were the same?
Or 30 years look, looked pretty much the same. Wow. It was weird.
Did we do the age app on baby? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, no, no. What I was saying is I did it on my 10-year-old or my 9-year-old at the time to see, oh, well, let's see what it does with a young face. And to age it, it didn't look that different. It just kind of got wrinkled and like pulled together because his head and face was so skinny already.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking like that the reverse of that is you take wrinkled old Yoda
and smooth him out
and you kind of smooth him out a little bit and it's a cute little thing. And of course the giant eyes, since Disney hasn't released any Baby Yoda merchandise yet, it's
such
all been handmade.
Yeah.
And to me, and my wife decided to crochet some, you know, little ones. I almost brought one with me to the, to the marathon. Mm-hmm. I would have gone to sleep because then I would have
been cuddling with it.
But the key, and this is the thing in all the, in fan art and in handheld stuff.
It's the eyes.
You've got to get the eyes right. They have to be the right proportion to the rest of the head. And that's, I think, must be the hardest thing to do because that's the thing I see. When I see it immediately, I'm like, that's not cute.
Yeah.
The eyes have to be the right size.
Yeah. Like Puss in Boots when he does the big eyes.
And yes.
Yeah. Great scene.
Well, they're Disney eyes. That's what they're called.
Disney eyes.
That's how they anthropomorphized animals to make you like them is by making the eyes large.
Totally makes sense.
And suddenly you're just like, you can't kill that.
I love
its
it.
Eyes are too cute.
Well, and I don't know if you guys heard this rumor, but I did growing up, that Yoda was modeled after Spencer W. Kimball, the prophet for the church at the time.
Yeah, that's not true, but I
had
heard.
Because he was an older man with big ears, you know, and
they did have a similar head shape.
But
that's been debunked.
And the big ears and the gravelly voice, and it's been debunked. Yeah. I believed it full on growing up.
I've never heard that before.
It was a sign for me.
So because you grew up outside of Utah.
Well, when I grew up, I remember hearing that. I lived overseas in the 80s, and that was for me a sign that my church was known and, you know,
getting recognition.
Yeah, because
it's in Star Wars.
It's in Star
now.
Wars. But then we had the prequels with the younger Yoda just going crazy, right? When he does that big old lightsaber
that was
battle.
So awesome.
Yeah.
That part was actually based on President Kimball of the LDS
Church.
Of course
it was.
Because everybody knows he was a noted duelist in saber.
Obviously. Two canes going. Purple. Was his lightsaber purple? Yoda's? I don't remember.
No, that was Mace Windu's.
Oh, of course. See?
I bet you knew that, of course.
Surface fan. I would have.
Right. So interestingly enough, the big reveal at the end of the first episode was that there was a baby of Yoda's species, which we didn't even know the species name.
Right.
So immediately everybody starts speculating, is it Yoda?
Right.
You know, I was surprised because they were pretty clear about when the timeline was. Again, big fan, though.
Yeah.
That people were like, so does this take place when like Yoda was a kid?
No, it wasn't clear for me in the beginning.
It wasn't clear for you. You didn't understand
Googling.
That. Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Because for me, it was, we obviously know when it is. I've read up all the stuff on it.
Yeah.
And then it's not. So I know that can't be Yoda. But then my question is, could it be a clone of Yoda? Could it be, you know, it's obviously his species, but
somewhere there's a baby mama.
You know, it was a good trick of saying, you know, it's a 50-year-old. And he's like, I thought it was supposed to be a 50-year-old. And I think it's the IG droid that's like, not all species age the same.
Right.
Way, which should have been a great clue because nobody's as long-lived as Yoda, except maybe a Wookiee.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or at least is known for having an exceptionally long lifespan. One of the things that Favreau said is that the reason he got the idea of keeping Baby Yoda a secret was from Donald Glover, actually, as he was working on The Lion King. This was, again, from the Variety article. Favreau said... they were talking about music and pop culture, and he was saying what people really like now is to be surprised because it just doesn't happen that much.
True.
When Beyonce did an album, she would just put it online and everybody would react to it. Just putting it out there spurred a conversation that would become more viral and bring more genuine attention than any actual marketing.
Yeah.
Because then it doesn't feel like a sales job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everybody, watch The Mandalorian for this cute little thing. It was way better for people to say, oh my gosh, did you see Baby Yoda?
Yeah.
And that's literally
Which
how I was.
To me.
I saw it the first time. I was like, well, that was pretty cute. And then in the second episode, I'm watching this thing going, that is like the most darling thing I've ever seen. And everything he did, I got to the point where I went downstairs to tell my wife, hun, I know you're never going to watch this.
Yeah.
But this is the cutest thing I've ever seen on this show. And the more I watched it, the more I was convinced it was the cutest thing I'd ever seen ever. Anywhere.
Well, that's how I got into it, because my 11-year-old goes, Mom, you have to see him. He's so cute. out. And I thought, what? I've got this boy, like, squeaky voice telling me, like, similar thing. Yep. So it became more organic that we all kind of...
And that, and in our day and age, that's what everybody wants. Mm-hmm. Because if you see a commercial, you're like, oh, that's a nice commercial. You're not going to be like, hey, did you try the latest flavor of Doritos? It's crunchalistically delicious. Like, nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to swallow the ad line. But if you find some Doritos at a concert you're going to that you've never seen before, mm-hmm. and you try them and you're like, oh my gosh, that's so good. You might go home and say, I had these Doritos at a concert.
Not sponsored.
And have you ever had them? Yeah, not sponsored. By the way, this content is not sponsored. Let me rephrase it. I had this delicious popcorn at the Megaplex.
There you go.
And
there you go. Shout out to the Megaplex.
But the idea is that it spreads faster as we excitedly tell each other about it. Mm-hmm. But we've been conditioned over the years to block out the attempted conditioning of us, like the deliberate conditioning. So this Beyonce strategy works. So Disney deliberately withholds the child from marketing and merchandising plans. And admittedly, they sacrificed
millions,
lots of money,
so much money
for the Christmas season.
I would have gone crazy for Christmas.
Yeah.
And you may yet.
Next year?
Yeah, because the next season's going to premiere in the fall.
Which was hard for my children to understand because they're used to just hitting next episode in their lives today. And they were like, we have to wait now? I'm like, welcome to my childhood.
But here's the thing. So Baby Yoda took off so fast. By the second episode, it was already a meme.
Yep. It was.
And by the third episode, it stole the grumpy cat, the whole idea and sort of the way that people hooked onto it. And people, the two that I saw most and that the article I read and Variety mentioned most was Baby Yoda sipping from the little mug.
Oh, the bone broth.
I still see that one.
So
that
funny.
One's out there
and
a lot.
The switch flipping on the ship.
Oh, so
that was
funny.
Great. That was a great one.
And when it's, you know, he's turning on Ludacris or something in
those
the ship.
Yeah.
And he just like looks at him while he deliberately flips. I mean, that stuff
that was perfect.
When he takes the ball off and starts gnawing on it, I'm just like, this is killing me. This, this is cuteness overload.
I want another baby.
It's killing me right now. So Favreau says there's definitely the opportunity to explore characters beyond what we've presented on the show. There's a fluid line between what's in movie theaters and what's on the screen at home.
Yeah.
It's exciting for me because I get to tell stories over the course of several hours and not just within the footprint of one theater going experience. Well, so he saw the same thing that we've just been talking about.
That drop trooper, is that what you call it? She'd make a, I want to know
Cara
her story.
Dune.
Yeah, with her.
And that's what he's saying is it's now only a matter of time before something like The Mandalorian then becomes a movie. Right. And it crosses over the other direction.
That's interesting.
So that's sort of the history and kind of what turned The Mandalorian into sort of the phenomenon that it's kind of become. Let's take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to discuss a little bit, talk a little bit deeper about the characters, who they are, because I'm sure that, Mary, there's a lot of people like you who might have more questions about...
They come in and out. I'm not sure if that person's
who is that
important.
Guy? What's the deal? Yeah. And maybe a little bit about the backstory that might help you when you see him. Why some fans are going, oh, wow. And the other fans are like, yeah.
That was cool.
Sure.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, we're talking The Mandalorian. The season one is finished on Disney Plus. It's an unequivocated hit. Mm-hmm. It's got a season two that's already announced. I'm Andy Farnsworth, Mary Richards from KSL News Radio and from a Christmas podcast. We'll talk about that later. And Herb Scribner from Deseret.com, the entertainment editor who puts up all those great articles on Deseret.com that you read about entertainment. So let's talk about some of the characters, all right? We get, we're introduced initially to the Mandalorian, sometimes called as Mando, which could or maybe is a slang or an offensive term.
Or a nickname, because they care
for him.
It
also sounds like Lando.
It does sound like Lando.
I know, so is Lando a Landalorian? Like, I'm just
Landalorian.
Very confused.
He is a loner, a gunfighter, very good at being a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
He also, as we go along through the series, he's a foundling who was rescued at a young age by Mandalorians. So he's not a Mandalorian by birth. But as we find out during the episodes, Mandalorian is more of a creed than a race.
This is the way. Have we not said that?
Yes.
This whole podcast. This is the way.
We get to meet a bunch of Mandalorians. Yep. Oh, if you remember, is the first or second episode, when he first takes that Beskar and makes the shoulder piece.
I can't remember.
But everybody's like, oh, that was Boba Fett in the background. Did you see him, Boba
Fett? Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I had so many questions. I was like, well, how does he connect with Boba Fett and his armor and his mask? Because they look really similar. And didn't he die in the Sarlacc pit? Is that what it's called?
Very good.
Yes.
Very good.
I did one of those articles where, and I wasn't the only one to do it, but that you take the screenshot and you heighten the brightness and you can see a shave in the background. And it totally is.
He's climbing out.
It totally is. It's totally in the background. You can see like a shape and it's got the armor and it's like very identical armor to Boba Fett. So,
well, but remember too that Boba Fett was introduced. Maybe you didn't know this, Mary.
Probably did not.
Boba Fett was actually introduced into Star Wars in the holiday special in 1978.
What?
He was animated.
Oh.
Luke and Han. It's one of the most poorly animated cartoons you will ever see. It is terrible, but they got.
You're selling
they
it. I'm really excited.
No. We did a podcast. Go back in our archives on Fan Effect.
Pointing down again.
Pointing down again to scroll down or up, whatever it takes. We did, a couple of years ago, we did a breakdown of the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, okay.
It is a horrid mess. It's funny. It's shocking. You will stare at it with your jaw dropped like, this was actually made with the real Star Wars characters. And it was. But Boba Fett was introduced in an animated portion where Luke and Han crash on a planet with like sea creatures and whatever. And he comes along riding some kind of beast. And he has the rifle that the Mandalorian has in this show with the two prongs at the front that he has slung over his shoulder.
Some roasting marshmallows.
Interesting.
Rifle.
Yeah. And he helps or at least he seems to be helping them. They keep him and Luke keep warily calling each other friend. Friend, like neither one of them believes
in the
word.
Sounds like a newsroom day for us.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And eventually, of course, Boba Fett betrays them, and it turns out he's working with Darth Vader.
There you go. See,
so then we find out Boba Fett's a bad guy, and then he gets introduced on screen in movie in Empire Strikes Back the next year.
Yes. Right. So are they bad, like in The Mandalorian and Boba Fett, or do they just work for whoever pays them?
So. That's a good question, because a bounty hunter works for whoever pays them.
Okay.
And that's kind of what Boba Fett is. Boba Fett, of course, is the clone of Jango Fett.
Right.
From the Attack
prequels.
Of the Clones. Mm-hmm. He was the little kid who's running around that would then end up wearing the armor later.
Yes, I remember that.
But Boba Fett, where Jango Fett got his Mandalorian armor has never really been explained that I know of, although I bet there's some fans listening here who could message me on Twitter or Facebook and tell me where that takes place, because it probably takes place somewhere.
They know that.
Maybe it's
they
the
know
comics.
Too much. Yeah.
Well, but they wiped all the...
Get a new hobby.
They wiped... hey, that is not allowed on this show.
So, it's called Fan Effect.
Forgive me. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
We'll take that out in post. I'll go take that out in post.
Let's not forget
who
spent multiple hours watching Downton Abbey.
Okay, that's true.
We all express our fandoms in different ways. You know the backstory of every single person who walked through the kitchen.
That's impressive. That's impressive.
It's true.
So, like I said, we all love our things. It's all good.
Continue.
But at any rate, there's something, we don't know where Jango Fett got his armor, but we meet more Mandalorians and we find out about the planet Mandalore in the Clone Wars. So Dave Filoni, who is helping out with this, it's a really good pairing with him because he's the one who's introduced all the animated series, current ones, are considered part of the canon. So the stories can cross over. That's how we got Ahsoka's voice and a guy named Kanan Jarrus, a Jedi, whose voice appeared at the end of Rise of Skywalker.
Which Google told me about, and I had no
Most
idea.
Most of the casual fans would have no idea on those.
Like, people are talking to her.
Some of them didn't even recognize Samuel L. Jackson's voice as Mace Windu.
I did know that.
I did. All right. So you keep moving your fandom level up, and then you drop it a little bit. So we'll settle on where exactly
where
you fall
like
in.
I can't decide where to stay here, because people I know are listening.
But he's, of course, the main character. He was described in his character as being Clint Eastwood-esque, with advanced combat skills and of questionable moral character.
It's the voice.
They say that, and they try to imply that through the first episode. But the moment he shoots the IG droid.
Yep. For the baby.
You know that he's a nice guy.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
He'd make a great father.
And that's the big problem that anything Disney and Star Wars has when they want to have somebody supposedly on the fringes. They're never going to stay on the fringes.
No.
Han Solo being example
number
one.
I was about to say Han Solo. Exactly.
And that's okay because we don't want, we don't really want, like the kid in us doesn't want them on the real fringes.
We want clear good and evil. And I've said that ever since they started making these like Maleficent was troubled. I don't care. There's good and there's evil. That's what we need as kids.
Yeah, I still don't
understand. She was troubled, Mary.
I still don't understand her.
She was troubled. It's not her fault. He stole her things.
And the Mandalorian is good now because he kills and mows down all these troopers to save this little baby.
But everybody knows the stormtroopers are bad.
Yes, they are bad.
Yeah. Because they wear the Empire
They
stuff.
Are bad. They punched him. I hated that scene.
Oh my gosh. That was so, so funny. That might be the funniest thing I've ever seen.
When
the final episode
when so
Jason Sudeikis and Adam Pally are punching the baby. That made me laugh so hard.
Funny. I kept thinking he's in a padded thing. He's safe. He's safe. But when they were doing the target practice and they kept
That was great. That was great.
Yeah, he says to keep waiting. That was really funny.
So we've got the child who we talked about. He's performed by various puppeteers. There's not one specific like Frank Oz was for Yoda.
Is he CGI too?
Okay, so there's a tiny bit of CGI, but most of it is actual puppet.
When he eats the frog.
That's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. He has force abilities.
Of course he does.
He's a toddler still at age 50. And his role in the story is the client has offered a bounty for his capture.
And we don't know
Preferably live, but the client didn't seem to care all that much. And we didn't know if it was for the client who's played by Werner Herzog or if it was for somebody else beyond Werner Herzog. But at the very least, he's the one we assumed wants the child.
Bad guy. Yeah. Don't like him.
We've got Carl Weathers, who plays a guy named Greef Karga. He's an ex-magistrate and a leader of the Bounty Hunter Guild who actually hires the Mandalorian in that first episode.
Yeah.
We've met the client played by Werner Herzog with his amazing German accent.
Right?
Yeah.
I saw somebody on Twitter that was like, when do we get a series about whatever planet Werner Herzog is from so we can hear lots of people talking like him?
It's going to be a World War II epic.
Yeah.
Nick Nolte is the voice of Queel.
Someone told me that, and I thought it was a joke. Queel. Well, doesn't he also say, he keeps calling him something else. He goes, I have a name, and his name is Queel, right?
Okay, yeah, his name is Queel, but I don't remember what he calls him. He's an Ugnaught.
Ugnaught, that's what he
which,
calls him.
If spoken. If you'll recall, the Ugnaughts were the little pig-faced guys that lived on Cloud City, or at least on Cloud City down in the reactor where Chewbacca rescued C-3PO.
That's right.
And he talks about how he was a former slave and that he was able to earn his freedom.
Yeah, because he keeps saying Ugnaught, da-da-da-da. He goes, I have a name, it's Queel. Okay, I got it now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have spoken was the best line.
I have spoken.
Like, mic drop, I'm out. I have spoken.
I'm going to use that more in real life.
You should. And in
your articles.
I have spoken.
Put it in your Twitter handle, Herb Scribner, I have spoken.
I have spoken.
I like it.
I like it.
You need to make a definitive declarative statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to do it with my children.
Not to be questioned.
I kind of did it with Saturday Chores. Like, I said it. I think.
Ooh,
I,
but that works when they've seen the show. Then they're like, "Oh, I know what mom means."
Oh, she's pulling
do the
up
dishes.
A line.
I've spoken. And just walk away.
Perfect.
And just walk away.
Now we've got director Taika Waititi, who is famous for directing Thor Ragnarok.
Great movie.
Who is also the voice of Korg in Thor Ragnarok.
Great character.
The rock guy who has the the Kiwi accent.
That guy. I love that guy. Good.
Yeah. Password's free, of course. Hey, we're going on a ship. Want to come? He voices IG-11, a bounty hunting droid who processes everything in a precise and literal manner.
Love that droid. Yeah. We should do a whole episode on amazing droids because the one from Rogue One, Alan Tudyk,
K2SO.
Amazing. This guy, I've not loved a droid since, BB-8 and that. Well,
that was good.
That was a good impression.
Good.
I'm really impressed
with
myself.
And then R2, always loved R2. C-3PO, kind of annoying, but the guy, Rogue One droid, I keep pointing at you. What was his name again?
K2SO.
And then this droid is amazing. I mean, who thought droids could have that much personality and sass?
And there was the one in Solo that Lando.
Voiced by Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Also had some sass.
Yes, droids with sass.
That apparently Lando liked as more than friends or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was a whole thing. You can find that on the internet, Mary, if you really want to know.
I remember now. It's
Underworld,
coming back.
Underworld
I had
discussion.
Blocked that.
IG-11, of course, after getting shot through the head by the Mandalorian,
Mando.
It gets reprogrammed by Queel to now protect and nurse. To nurse and protect. And, you know, to me, and I think you don't maybe catch this on the first watch through, and it might be on subsequent viewings where it becomes more obvious, but as you put the puzzle pieces together, the Mandalorian, one of the reasons that he kills IG is not necessarily just because he thinks that Baby Yoda is so cute.
It's because he hates droids.
The droid killed his family and was about to kill him before the Mandalorian saved him. So he already hates droid, and the thought of the droid killing a small child
is too much.
Very traumatic for him. So that's something I didn't catch on the initial one. I just thought he was doing it to keep the full bounty for himself, which, you know, is a side effect.
No.
Because he did turn the child in for the bounty.
Yeah, he did
it. And then
first.
Decided later to go back and get it.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, in the episode where the client takes possession of the child, the other guy, the one who's arguing to keep it alive, he has a Kamino cloner patch on his shoulder.
What?
Kamino, the place where they made all the clones in Attack of the Clones.
Whoa, that's deep.
So that might be what they wanted that for, was to clone the species.
Whoa, layers.
Herb and I were supposing before we saw Rise of Skywalker that it would play in like that, to where at some point they had to fight an evil clone of Yoda.
Oh,
of you know,
because
that would put him like 100 years later, so he's still young. And this Baby Yoda uses the Force in a bad way. If you'll recall, he Force chokes.
Oh yeah,
Cara Dune.
Yeah, he does.
Oh yeah, little temper tantrum.
Cara Cynthia Cara Dune, a former Rebel shock trooper. That means her job was to get dropped in to do early grunt fighting when the Rebellion would fight the Empire, which is why she had the tattoos and why she's not particularly welcome to Imperials. They would recognize her tattoo and immediately
they would,
want to.
Because they make her cover it up in Chapter 7 or 8.
Exactly.
But she fights Mando so well.
She fights him to a draw, actually.
Yeah.
Interesting, we find out in the final episode, she's from Alderaan.
That's right.
How did I miss
that's
that?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
I know.
Princess Leia was her princess on her planet.
Yeah.
Would also would explain her hatred of the Empire.
Yeah.
She's not.
I mean, you never know. They could change it if J.J. Abrams gets a hold of it. What?
And she's played by Gina Carano, who was actually in a movie with Obi-Wan Kenobi at Ewan McGregor. A few years ago. It was actually a pretty cool action movie. I think she was a former MMA fighter, so like...
Oh, it would make sense for her to be doing these kinds of things.
But she's now a mercenary, and at first you don't know how her and Mando are going to end up, and then they end up kind of being on the same side.
She's a matchmaker, too. She tries to get him to settle down with that young widow. I like that.
But do you want him to end up with her or with Kara?
No, the young widow.
You want the young widow?
Raise his child in that beautiful place.
So maybe that's where the series will end.
Happily ever after.
Happily ever after until the Emperor raises his ghost Sith fleet from the ice. And
just let me imagine his perfect life when he had a sad childhood, okay? Have we talked about how...
Hopefully it's not
Rogue
on
One
the core system.
Isn't there a Rogue One parallel with her parents hide her in a thing and she's...
There was some...
Does that
there
happen
was some
a lot
commonality.
In that
Maybe
universe.
In the Star Wars universe, you just have to learn to look under rocks because there might be a child hiding underneath.
Who could grow
it.
Up and True. Save the galaxy.
Yeah.
So some other guest stars we've had. Amy Sedaris was Pelimoto, the cantankerous docking bay attendant and the ship mechanic on Tatooine.
Funny.
Oh, yeah. That was a good
With
episode.
The little pit
she's
droid
like, I'm
from
awake.
Episode
I'm awake.
One.
Yeah.
Jake Cannavale as Toro Calican. He's the bounty hunter who wants to join the guild by trying to capture the Fennec Shand, the one played by Ming-Na Wen.
And then he tries to turn, and then it turns on him.
Correct. And then Mandalorian's like, don't do this.
And that's the episode that ends with those two boots.
Yes.
And we never really got an answer on that.
Everybody assumes is Boba Fett, because Boba Fett has spurs.
There's so much
Boba
Fett
talk. I didn't notice that.
That's so much Boba Fett
talk. Better come out in the fall.
And they deliberately left that in. Now, it's funny that you say that, because I had a quote that I pulled from somewhere, because I really wanted to bring that up in particular. You never know. Oh, where did I? Did I have it in the notes?
What's going to?
John Favreau said something to the effect. No, I guess I don't have it.
You never know.
But he said something
to
the effect of, there will be no legacy characters introduced, at least not in season one, they said.
Oh.
Now, at the time, who knew what that meant?
Optimistic they are.
But the good news is, now we can get Han Solo still alive. Although, this is only 5 years after Return of the Jedi. That's not going to work.
When was Ben born? So, is he busy with, is he busy with Princess Leia? Are they raising a family?
I want to say that Ben was born, maybe around this time.
Or could we see Han still doing his,
Yeah, no, we couldn't,
because
Harrison Ford's too old.
Well, no, we would use Watts's bucket from Solo, the actor.
Alden Ehrenreich?
No, we couldn't. Never mind.
Nobody,
the time frame.
Nobody
Cut
would
this
accept
out in
that.
Post. I apologize.
No. But what I'm saying is nobody... Well, you could try to make Alden Ehrenreich look older. The problem is... You're going to have to make him look older than Harrison Ford was in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're just, unfortunately, that
was. Where were we? You're running through the characters.
Yeah, no. So we had Fennec Shand, who was Ming-Na Wen, if you've watched Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Nope.
Well, you suck then, because that's a pretty good show.
No. I know, it is on the list.
But she's like a good fighter anyway.
Yeah, I know that's supposed to be good.
She's an assassin who Mandalorian captures. And then we've got Emily Swallow as the armorer. That's the Mandalorian woman who makes the armor and equipment out of the steel. They're called Beskar.
Yeah, that was a cool character.
And an ingot, by the way, because they use a whole bunch of terms. An ingot of Beskar is a little square of that metal.
Oh, like their measurements.
Ingots is what you do with like precious metals. It's how you can measure them into certain weights and sizes and stuff like that. So there was gold ingots that they would have back in the pirating days. So this is an ingot made out of Beskar, which is a precious metal to the Mandalorians that apparently the Empire mined and stole.
Oh.
And so taken from the Mandalorian planet, I assume, or whatever. But it has significance beyond just it's a metal that makes lasers bounce off of it. I asked the question and had a Star Wars fan message me because I thought, is Mandalorian's armor made out of Beskar, and is Captain Phasma's armor made out of Beskar?
Oh,
and they said, no, it's made out of something else.
Oh.
Which I'm going to take for truth.
Yeah.
I thought that would have been cool if it had turned out there was that combination, maybe Captain Phasma was a former Mandalorian, but...
Nah, she's trash.
But whatever. And then finally, as we don't meet until the final episode, Giancarlo Esposito as Moff Gideon.
Yes.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
A former officer of the Imperial Security Bureau, which is... essentially the secret police of the Empire.
Okay.
The SS.
What, did he kill a captain for interrupting him or something? Remember the chatter?
Here's the question. I went back and forth with Adam over this. That whole scene was meant to be humorous.
Right.
And it was meant to have an opportunity for someone to get the child back before it gets delivered to
him.
Hero
droid.
So having the person on the radio saying things like, oh, no, he just killed somebody else for looking cross-eyed. Like, it was meant to paint Gideon as a jerk, but also it was meant to be hilarious. Like,
and so
they're like just chilling on their bikes.
I love that scene.
It was so funny.
Now, here's a question, because I haven't watched this with my kids yet, Mary. How were your kids at the end of the second to last episode when Queel's dead and the troops have Baby Yoda?
They were kind of like, I just tried to do the face, but like their eyes were big, their mouths
were dropped. Did they look at you like, Mama, please tell me Baby Yoda's going to be okay?
Well, I was telling them before they even asked, Baby, he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. Look, he's got him on the front.
Mary.
Oh, switching to the back.
Mary.
I did.
Let him ride the roller coaster of emotion.
I can't help it. I'm a helicopter mom. I did fast forward through in chapter 6. When they're going through that tense scene in the spaceship and he's like killing people right and left, but then they end up not being killed,
which was pretty clever.
I was like, this is violent. Fast forward, this is violent, because my 9-year-old
Mary,
is the
this
youngest.
Is on Disney Plus. There's not an R-rated movie on Disney Plus.
It's still pretty violent. I'm approved. We've already said this in the first half.
But I'm just saying, this should at least allay some of your fears.
Oh, that's true.
They're not going to have you cut off the head of a stormtrooper and have it like bounce down the
It's true.
Down the entryway.
Don't say that. That's a terrible image. So you're saying I should have... I just kept trying to reassure them because I was trying to reassure myself that it was all going to be fine.
But that's part of the fun of watching these things. Don't
that's
you think,
true.
Herb?
Yeah.
Who has no kids, so you can be heartless if you want.
Yeah, I have no kids. I do think it's good that this show has been kind of like... I'm going to use the term family friendly.
Uh-huh.
But I think that it's just been safe and kind of like... It's kind of cool because I think Star Wars, the original trilogy was very much like that. I mean, it had its moments, of course, but otherwise it was pretty safe to watch. And I think as long as they keep doing that, they're gonna succeed like that way. And this kind of ties to Disney in general. Like, there's talk of like, oh, are they gonna make the Marvel Cinematic Universe like darker, rated R, Deadpool, right? That whole discussion. And there's a question, do you make Star Wars darker? Do you do that? And I just think, listen, like...
Don't do it.
This is cool content. Everyone can watch it. You don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. I think leave that to other people. And
I don't think there should ever be an R-rated Star Wars anything.
No,
that'd be so awkward.
People would be so upset. They really would.
Well, but even beyond the people being upset, because I would. And I would
be
upset because I probably would watch it, but not let my kids watch it, making me a giant hypocrite. And I don't like things that make me a hypocrite.
It would ring untrue seeing stuff.
That's true also.
You know, if Mando starts to...
To me, that's not understanding. It's the problem that Star Trek kind of finds itself in right now.
Yeah.
Where people who've grown up with it, and it's the same thing to some extent with Marvel,
The stuff that we saw in the Marvel Cinematic Universe would never have happened in the comics in 1970 or maybe even 1980, maybe. Mm. Early 80s, maybe. But we've got, you know, as readers have grown up and have still enjoyed consuming the content, they've wanted things that were aimed at where they are now, not where they were then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Spider-Man defeated the Sandman in issue number 3 or 4 of Amazing Spider-Man from 1960. I kid you not, by vacuuming him up in a vacuum cleaner.
That's awesome.
That's how Spider-Man defeated the Sandman.
That's very clever.
At his high school.
That's awesome.
He used a shop vac at the high school and vacuumed up the Sandman. That's how he captured him.
Not sponsored.
That's not going to work in 2020.
True.
No.
That's not going to work in the movie. That's not even going to work in a Spider-Man cartoon.
It has to be bigger, crazier.
Well, no, it just has to be like we just are in a different place.
Yeah.
And for a Spider-Man comic today, where the reader's average age is a lot higher than it used to be, it's going to have to be. So as Star Wars fans are now 40 years invested in this, you know, people like you, like your brothers and me, who are roughly the same age,
right,
have a great emotional investment. Herb, you're a little bit younger. You came up through the prequel trilogy more so than the original, but you also got really heavily invested in it emotionally and, you know, entertainmently.
Right. And then our next generation of kids are.
Right. And different things. And so I get that we want that, but I don't think we really do want that, because part of the reason we still like this is that kid part inside us that played with the toys and made our own adventures.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that is very underrated in cinema, and this is something I raised when the Joker movie came out, was that like something that the Dark Knight movie did, and something that Revenge of the Sith did, was like they lead up to this violent moment, and then they don't show it. So in Revenge of the Sith, right, like, Anakin walks into the Chamber of Younglings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pulls his lightsaber. You know what he does, but
you don't
see
it. See it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Dark Knight, like the Heath Ledger's Joker does something, but, you know, slits a guy's throat, something like that, but they don't show it.
But they come a lot closer.
They come a lot closer, yes. But it's like you get what happens without having to see it. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because it's like you get the tension, you get the darkness, but you don't have to actually see it. And that's where I think, and even the Revenge of the Sith thing, you know, that felt uncomfortable to me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, literally he's killing children. And so, like, for that to be kind of uncomfortable, I can't imagine if they actually showed, slaughter and those kind of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think as long as they keep it where it is, where, like, yeah, like, a lot of people in Star Wars seem to get, like, stabbed with a lightsaber in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be modus operandi,
which used to be a fatal wound, but not necessarily.
Yeah. So I think as long as they keep it on that level, I think you're okay. But I wouldn't want them to go darker than that.
I know.
That.
Not
I don't
any
think
darker.
They will either.
And not
the only blood that's ever been seen in Star Wars is when Obi-Wan chops off the arm of the guy in the bar, which is before they figured out that lightsabers cauterize wounds. I don't know.
Yeah. Did they change that for the...
No.
Okay.
Still there.
So I like to suppose that because lightsabers cauterize wounds, that Obi-Wan actually used the Force to pull his arm off and drop it on the...
Well,
I'm just kidding.
Oh.
I never thought of that before right this second.
That's an interesting idea.
It would at least explain the blood.
Did you guys already discuss, and maybe you did because I didn't hear your Star Wars when you did I haven't listened to that podcast yet. I'm pointing down to go, I don't go that. I read this little theory that they said the chapter of The Mandalorian when Baby Yoda, the child, uses the Force to heal came out the day before Rise of Skywalker, where she uses the Force to heal.
We did talk about that.
You did talk about that? Mm-hmm. Good. You guys are the
so
best.
So it established the Force power before you saw it in the big movie.
But that's just assuming that people had... Because I watched those out of order. And I thought, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. No, and I wondered if that was the reason. They said they did it so that it wouldn't compete with Rise of Skywalker. And there's probably a little bit of truth to that.
Yeah.
But I really think it was so they could introduce that Force
introduce
power
that
one
force
day
power.
Before everybody saw it.
That way it didn't
seem
so.
Wait, why is Rey able to do that? Oh, because Baby Yoda was able to do that.
Well, and it shows Baby Yoda using the Force for good. And he's still learning. He's still a child leaning to learn how to use it, maybe, because he Force choked the one time, and then he heals with
but
the
it's
other.
Obviously there's something instinctual, at least in Yoda's species.
And
maybe we'll find more about midichlorians in season 2 of The Mandalorian.
No. With a Lady Gillette razor. Hold it up.
Yep. Ooh, look at that.
Look at that.
It also shaves the hairs off Yoda's face.
Do the thing with the hands, baby. What does he say? He's like, do the thing with the hands.
Oh, right. Yeah, have him wave the hand thing.
That's what
and then
also,
the baby, like waves
he
at
waves
him.
His hand. Those moments of humor, and this is exactly what Star Wars is all about, breaking up and having that dry humor in there that makes you go, ha ha.
That's why I love Jon Favreau. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he was perfect for this. And I think this is a little off what we're saying, but, like, my dream team is, like, Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, I always forget how to pronounce his name,
to Taika Waititi. Him. Yeah. And then maybe Kevin Feige kind of like messing around with some of the production stuff, but like
think about this.
It'd be perfect.
Get JJ Abrams
IG-11.
Out.
Let's
just, I know, right?
Yeah. This is something that cuz I don't want to bag on any of the Star Wars movies cuz everybody doesn't like one of the three sequel trilogies. Usually you can't get anybody to agree. Like somebody will like two of the three and whichever one they don't like will depend on the person. But
true.
I was surprised and only because I saw it so soon after Rise of Skywalker. But did you get emotional when IG-11 walks through the
yes,
lava?
Yes, totally.
That was harsh.
That was so, it was like
you
K2
got like
again.
Two episodes with this droid.
And I loved him.
And when he walks through the lava, you're like, I hope that doesn't hurt IG-11.
Exactly.
You're so great. And you cared about a droid
yeah.
getting
yeah.
shot up by a bunch of stormtroopers.
He was humanized to me because he cared for, you know, and yeah, he's totally humanized.
I mean, we kind of went on the same emotional journey that the Mandalorian finally felt okay with him. Mm-hmm. What did you think of R2-D2 with
standing
buff
up with
arms
legs.
And legs?
Oh my gosh, that was hilarious.
It
was,
how come nobody's thought of that before?
He just stands up.
That was awesome.
Rowing.
Now I will crush you.
My sons and I were like, this is the best. Who knew? It's like that picture of an owl when they raise its feathers and it has really long legs. It's just hilarious. But it was similar to K2 in Rogue One. I keep thinking back to the parallels with Rogue One, where you just really care for this droid, even though they're not a human, but they sound and act like one, and they, even if it was programmed to be a protector, it protected, you know?
It did its job.
Yeah.
And even though Mando didn't trust it, he learned to trust it.
Yeah.
And we all did.
And then yeah. Mando's heart got broken when he went out, or he was like, cool, thanks. I don't know. I think he felt sad.
I think he did too. I think he might be reconsidering his hatred of droids.
Yeah.
Although I don't think he'll ever like a super battle droid, which is why I hope a super battle droid gets reprogrammed in the series at some point.
That'd
and he
be
has
cool.
to actually deal with looking at one in the face.
Yeah.
And if he just shoots it immediately and the person's like, man, I just reprogrammed that thing.
I could see it. I
had to go get the power converters.
So some guests we had, Jon Favreau was actually a guest. He was the big giant Mandalorian.
Oh
really?
Yeah.
Oh. That's cool.
That had like the big rail gun.
Yeah.
Matt Lanter, who voiced Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars series.
Oh.
He was the New Republic guard on the prison ship, the only human that was on the ship.
Oh.
That's Matt Lanter, the voice of Anakin Skywalker.
That's cool.
Let's see. Then we had Horatio Sands from
yes.
Saturday Night Live in the first episode.
Wow, that's a throwback.
Adam Pally and Jason Sudeikis.
Yep, yep.
And, of course, Taika Waititi voiced the IG-11 droid.
Mm-hmm.
We had guest directors for everyone. Jon Favreau says he will direct at least one episode of season two. Lion King was the reason he couldn't direct any of season one.
Oh, okay. He was busy.
And Carl Weathers, according to Disney Insider, will also maybe direct one of the episodes.
I like that.
That would be
like
good.
Bryce Dallas Howard, we talked about, did one episode.
Great
Don't
chapter.
Know if she's coming back.
Five.
We had a female director besides her. Deborah Chow directed one episode.
Oh,
she
yeah.
actually directed the Jessica Jones series on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
And then a guy named Rick Famuyiwa. I think I completely butchered that name. He's an African director who made some movies that I've never seen. But the episodes, and then both, all three of them. So Dave Filoni, Famuyiwa and Chow were the three New Republic pilots in the X-Wings that blow up the guy who hires them for...
Which was awesome.
For the prison
that
ship.
Whole,
they got
that
their
was a great episode.
Right there.
It was really great.
I think that was one of my favorites. Yeah,
that really there
was a
connected
heist movie.
It to
yeah,
me.
It was good.
Yes, and when they come in, I was like, I recognize those guys. I love this.
Yeah, that was cool.
So really cool. We get to the final episode, and we touched on this. Let's talk for a second about... the Darksaber, because we've got to see where do we go from here?
Yeah. And how did he get that? Now that
Din
I know what's
Djarin,
important.
We've learned his name. The Mandalorian's name is Din Djarin.
Din Djarin.
Mm-hmm. Din Djarin.
He is accepted. He's essentially adopted Baby Yoda into his clan. Or he's now the protector.
It's the creed. It's
until, yes.
Yeah.
Until he can reunite him with his actual species.
He has to do it. No.
He's got to watch out for him.
This is the way.
So,
this is the way. I've spoken.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And since you've said I have spoken, now we have to end the podcast. Oh, darn it.
Wait.
No, just kidding.
What were you going to say? We keep interrupting you.
No. That was just funny. So this is where we've got. He flies off in the what's his ship called? The Razor Crest. cool ship, by the way.
Love it.
And it looks like a modified Republic troop transport.
Yeah.
With just fatter engines on the side so that it can fly through space instead of just in the atmosphere.
Did they make Lego sets out of that?
Because I'm sure they will.
Okay. They definitely will.
Because they kind of missed their opportunity. Like,
yeah, how big is the Baby Yoda Lego? Is it only like 3 centimeters big?
Yeah, the Yoda one's pretty short already.
Right.
We've got two.
How do you make the baby version of it?
It's just the head.
You just lose it. The kids are going to eat that thing like just like nothing. So maybe it'll hurt less when you step on it in the middle of the nightmare.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I've stepped on some bad ones.
But we have the Mandalorian adopts the baby.
And he flies off with him.
And I read an article online that argued, you know, some people have said that they Disneyfied the baby by making it too cute. Now, this was something I wanted to touch on.
Can't do that. We can't make it too cute.
Well, and that's the key. And this person argued, and I wish I could remember where it was, but I kind of agreed with them. By making Baby Yoda that cute, to the where we've all had the same reaction, all of us have had the same reaction looking at it, independent of each other. A lot of times if somebody's like, oh, you got to see this, you got to see this, you got to see this. And then you see it and you're like, okay, I don't get it. I don't get what the deal is. In-N-Out Burgers.
In-N-Out Burgers. Yeah, exactly.
I'll come back to that one again.
Everybody raves about those.
I don't get
it?
The hype. I don't get the hype.
Oh.
But this is one where it didn't matter how much they talked it up. You saw it and you're just like, yep, I get it.
I get it.
And they argue it had to be that way so that it's convincing that a man of questionable moral character, the Mandalorian, would automatically feel a protective instinct. It's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I joked, like, I think I broke a TV because I was just trying to hug the TV because I was the closest I could get to Baby Yoda. But it was that cute. So that it became actually helpful to the story because it was so darling and it was obviously unable to protect itself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And if it wasn't, you'd be like, okay, you're just doing this because Disney, because, you know, storytelling. But it,
I've seen no criticism, only praise for Baby Yoda.
If somebody says Baby Yoda's crazy, they're just lying.
Yeah.
They're just lying.
You're right.
So that's where we end up. We got to Moff Gideon tries to take possession. They find a way out. They get away from Moff Gideon. Mando has the sweet, awesome jetpack versus TIE fighter battle with him.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
We think Gideon is dead, but
he's not.
Giancarlo Esposito's not going to die that quick.
He has rubber bones. He's just like bounce around and just cut his way out.
So how did you feel about the reveal of the Darksaber? So for you were just not sure what it was.
I was like, whoa, that's kind of cool.
Why is
that
black?
Where'd he get that? Yeah. And he cut his way out. Awesome. But other people, like, did you know right away what it was?
So I'd heard of the Darksaber for years. My cousin, who's 12, he grew up watching the Clone Wars series.
Your cousin who's 12 had to tell you.
Yeah. Well, no, he always talked about, like, his favorite lightsaber was the Darksaber.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, like, eventually I'll get to Clone Wars. Eventually I'll get to Rebels. I'll, like, learn about it. So then I see that happen. And I'm like, oh, man.
That looks like I got to find out right now.
And then I look on Twitter, and I'm like, oh, this is trending. Like, that, like, Darksaber was trending. So I'm like, okay, this is it.
This is something.
So I was on vacation that week, so I spent all vacation. I went to the gym, like, 1,000 times, and every time I went to the gym, I would binge, like, 2 episodes, 3 episodes a time.
Getting swole,
about
watching the Clone Wars.
Looking out, and literally, no, seriously, and I'm not even lying. Like, that is exactly
You're
what
not
I
even
did.
Lying that you were getting swole.
I was getting swole learning about the Darksaber, and so I watched there's, like, 12...
Sorry. Never mind.
There's like 12 essential Clone Wars episodes about the Darksaber, or 12 Clone Wars and Rebels episodes about the Darksaber.
I'm actually going to recap some of those right now since you bring that up.
Okay.
So there are spoilers for episodes of the Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. This is for your sake, Mary, if you haven't already read up on this.
Yeah, I'll get there.
And this is for anybody who wondered what is the Darksaber. And there's an interesting connection between Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, and the Darksaber in particular.
Yeah.
So, the Darksaber first appeared in the second season episode of the Clone Wars called The Mandalore Plot. And the Darksaber is explained to be the weapon of Tar Vizsla, the first Mandalorian ever inducted into the Jedi Order, and the ancestor of Pre Vizsla, who is actually voiced by Jon Favreau in that episode of Clone Wars.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
That's and cool.
Give somebody else some work.
Presumably,
I know.
In Chapter 3 of The Mandalorian, Paz Vizsla, that's the big fat Mandalorian that was actually played by Jon Favreau, or at least voiced by him.
He's swole.
Yeah. Swole. He was with me in the gym.
He's ripped. That's right. Yeah, there we go. While you guys were learning about the Darksaber, because it's from his culture.
Bro,
exactly.
Buddies.
So this weapon was originally the first Mandalorian Jedi's weapon. Okay. And then it falls into the hands of Pre Vizsla, who is so Tari Vizsla dies, post and then the Vizsla, Jedi
pre-post-mid-Vizsla.
So the Jedi watch over the Darksaber until it was then liberated by one of the Vizsla descendants. And then for generations, it was secured, and Pre Vizsla used it to aid his Death Watch revolution against the Mandalorian government. That's the episodes that you watched in the, I think it was the first season. Let me just double it. The second season. So after various failed plots against the Republic, the Mandalorian government, and the Jedi, Pre Vizsla finally agrees to an alliance with Darth Maul's brother named Savage Opress.
He has a brother?
Yes. That's in the Clone Wars series.
Did he beat him up?
He's painted yellow instead of red.
Okay. Oh, wow.
At any rate, I have a lot to learn.
Oh, there's so much.
Actually one of the cooler subplot stories that goes through the Clone Wars. So Pre Vizsla has an alliance with Darth Maul and Savage Opress, and the friendship breaks up when Maul takes the Darksaber from Pre Vizsla and chops off his head.
Oh, yeah, as he would.
So for years, Darth Maul had the Darksaber. Mm. By the way, he survived the Phantom Menace.
Oh, I know from Solo. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. And then that just left hanging, and they never revisited that.
Well, hopefully, maybe we'll get a Disney Plus series that can continue that.
I don't know if I want to see it.
The Savage Darth Maul Darth Sidious thing.
Yeah. That was the sweetest fight I have ever seen.
It's probably one of the best Star Wars fights ever. So, like, definitely check that out.
He tries to use the Darksaber against the Emperor.
It's so cool. I was nerding out in the gym, like, lifting. I was like, yes. It was great.
I had to try to binge them all because at one point it looked like it was going to leave Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to watch like two seasons worth in like 7 days, and so I watched it while I was on walks. Like, I binged a lot.
Kids, yeah,
but that one episode, I thought, oh my gosh, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
It was amazing.
The Emperor thrashes them. Like, you're like, oh, Darth Maul versus the Emperor.
And he just goes...
The Emperor thrashes them.
Yeah. Wow. It's so cool.
Wow.
Darth Sidious, I should say.
Wow.
So then we go to Rebels. Now, the Darksaber disappears because that's the last we see it is Darth Maul has it. And the Emperor beats the crud out of him and then we don't see anything else. During Rebels, Darth Maul tries to lure Ezra Bridger over to the dark side using the Darksaber as a token of trust. Ezra takes it from him and gives it to his friend and crew member, Sabine Wren, who's a wandering Mandalorian herself.
Finally, a name I recognize. I know a Sabine.
Yeah, and so she keeps it safe, but eventually gives the Darksaber to another Kree's. This is the descendant of the...
I would bury this in a hill if I were these people. Like, this is
But
unsafe.
Anyway, it's the thing that sort of unites the Mandalorian people. It's the symbol of the leader, essentially.
It's super important and symbolic.
Yes.
And I didn't realize until I actually read your article, Herb, and you were talking about how, hey, this is important. And I was like, oh, this is important. Like,
yeah.
So it gets passed around then, but depending on who,
it's kind of like the leader. So
is
actually,
it like the Deathly Hallows, like the Elder Wand, in
probably there's something to that. But it's specific to the Mandalorian people.
I can geek out about Harry Potter, by the way.
It's specific to the Mandalorian people.
Got it.
So the idea is,
how did he get it?
Ezra got it from Darth Maul.
No, Moff Gideon. How did he get it?
That's the question.
Yeah. Right,
so the last time we saw it before Moff Gideon cuts his way out of the TIE fighter is that Sabine, one of our friends and heroes from Rebels, had it and gave it to the leader of Mandalore named Bo-Katan Kryze so that she could then lead the people into prosperity as the rebellion. This is at the beginning of the rebellion, so right around Rogue One time, just a little bit before that.
Okay.
So now Moff Gideon has it, so where did he get it?
Yay.
He was Imperial Security Bureau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, SS police, he could have got it any number of nefarious ways. Obviously, since he talks about the Knight of 1,000 Tears.
Yes.
When he is using that to taunt, which I think is what we might see in this new Clone Wars series that's coming to Disney Plus next month.
Yeah.
Is it will show us the Imperial attack on Mandalore or, you know, the Republic, Separatist, whatever. I don't know.
That would be really cool if they showed the attack on Mandalore.
Supposedly, it's supposed to be the Siege of Mandalore. So I don't know what it's going to end up being.
That'd be kind of cool.
Because all I'd heard was that a series was coming, but I didn't know.
But time-wise, it would fit maybe with Din Djarin's age. He'd be, you know, in his early 40s. I don't know how old Pedro Pascal is, but...
I think he's younger than that.
So we're assuming at some point either Gideon killed Bo-Katan.
Probably. He just killed someone for interrupting him.
Yeah, that's true.
Not a nice
guy.
Yeah.
Looking cross-eyed.
Impatient.
He's obviously not as classy as his accent would betray.
True.
Accents tell all.
Accents.
So, to wrap it up, we've got to wait 8 more months before we get another episode of The Mandalorian.
I know.
And I'm excited because they're working on scripts. I feel like the future's in good hands with these guys, mm-hmm. With Filoni and with Jon Favreau.
Do you think they have a vision for where it's going, or are they watching what the public think?
Much more so do than they did for the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're both really good writers.
Yeah.
You know, J.J. Abrams is famous for getting things started well and really hooking you in and then struggling to kind of bring it home.
Yeah, Felicity.
Felicity, Lost, you know, a lot of different things.
Yeah.
What a great, this is a great
premise. And
yeah, he's like your sourdough starters, you know. But
and then she ends up with the wrong guy.
If the baker, you know, cooks it too long.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. My wife's been making a lot of sourdough bread, I have that on my brain. But I feel good about where The Mandalorian's going. I'm surprised that it's so unifying. I think it probably has a lot to do with Baby Yoda.
It has everything to do with Baby Yoda.
But it can't just be that. It's got good nods to the past. It has just enough familiar things so that longtime fans can pick out some Easter eggs. I thought the episode where they go to Tatooine was a little too heavy on the fan service. I love fan service, but I prefer it in small doses hidden here and there to walk straight into the bar that Obi-Wan and Luke went into. I mean, look at the establishing shots for Mos Eisley in the movies.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
The fact that you walk into the exact same one that has that big
of
a...
all the towns in all the world.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You had to walk into mine.
And then, of course, you know, it was funny to see droids running the bar, whereas droids were banned from it.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
So that was kind of funny, but it just seems like that would have been better if he'd have gone to several bars, and that just happened to be one of them, but that ends up being the...
Bar hopping.
Yes.
Right. Why don't we have an episode where the Mandalorian goes bar hopping?
That'd be awesome.
Jon Favreau, you better give Mary Richards credit if you end up
drinking through a straw. I mean, how does he even eat or drink? When's the last time you took off that helmet? This morning.
Oh, yeah, but not in front of other people.
It was a rough morning.
He's like your kid when the kid is potty training is still in diapers. Don't look at me!
Oh, yeah.
I'm hideous.
He's like, he's got a drink. Okay, everybody, close your eyes and look away.
Okay,
you're good now.
I wonder too, because I've seen and I've written an article about this, but there were some rumors that like the next season will include characters from the Skywalker saga. Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be Boba Fett. That's the legacy character.
Yeah, and I think that's cool.
Who else could you bring in?
I'm worried that
Admiral Ackbar. I don't know.
I'm worried there'll be too many. Like, I don't want them to lean into that. I don't want them to be like, oh hey, it's this new show, new character,
so
and then
this
lean
is
into
why
it.
I feel good.
Touches
season.
Of it.
This
yeah.
is why I feel good about having Dave Filoni involved, because he seemed to understand when it was cool to have somebody you'd recognize show up.
Yeah.
And he never seemed to overuse it.
Right.
I feel much better about how he used legacy characters than, to a large extent, how J.J. used the legacy characters in the movie. You and I talked. Mm-hmm. There's a part of me that almost wishes that the whole Rey saga would have been set after all the legacy characters so that they couldn't be in it.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Maybe the Millennium Falcon could still be around for some reason.
Right.
And Chewbacca's old enough to be around and the droids could still be around. But like all the flesh and blood characters were already gone. I'm so glad we got another chance. Again, it's that two-edged sword for me. I'm so glad we got to see him again in those roles. But as far as the story that they tried to tell, I almost wish it had been way too far in the future.
We'd have that new trilogy of Poe, Finn, and Rey.
Yeah, where it was just them and no legacy characters.
Yeah, I get that.
But that's, you know, splitting hairs. We can't have that. But I feel like Filoni's done a good job in the Clone Wars of, you know, that's a smaller character. Oh, look, here's a little bit of an origin of that person.
Yeah.
And he was sparing in how he used them.
Yeah.
We got to meet Leia in one episode or one pair of episodes of Rebels, and that was it.
Like Road to Avonlea kept showing us pieces of some of the characters I liked in Anne of Avonlea and Anne of Green Gables.
Yes.
Yeah. Fan effect has all fan things, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, it does. You know it.
You know it.
That's why you can't be critical.
I'm not.
Obviously,
I was just trying
because
to
you were just...
I was sleep deprived earlier. I apologize. We took it out for post. What are we talking about? The West Coast feed didn't hear that.
Well, that's what we have. So, Mary Richards from KSL News Radio, thank you so much for joining us for this episode about The Mandalorian. You are on a podcast if people want to check it out. How do you find it?
Oh, gosh. We're really going to promote this. It's a Christmas podcast. People will love Christmas. It's called Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe Christmas Podcast. And we're not on, we're trying to get out there. So search us up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe Christmas Podcast.
Awesome. And you can hear your work if you're in Salt Lake or on the internet, KSL.com.
My parents listen from Missouri. You should too.
A reporter for KSL News Radio, and Herb, Deseret.com, constantly putting up good content, probably put up three or four articles while we were doing this episode because you're so good at multitasking.
True. I wish.
He needs a worker droid.
Deseret.com, Herb Schroeder, and like on Twitter, guys. Twitter?
At KSL M. Richards.
And at Herb Scribner.
At Herb Scribner. Awesome. Well, we've got more good Star Wars content in our past podcasts, so please check them out. If you're listening today from a link on social media, you can access past episodes, or even better, become a subscriber by going to Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or Spotify and searching Fan Effect. Give us another listen. And even better, leave a review. Become a subscriber. Until the next time, remember, we love this stuff just as much as you do.